This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. It's that day we call Your Money Matters, brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage. Mr. Kurt Rogers is with us. How are you, sir?
Your money matters now more than
ever.
Man,
I'm telling you, both nickels matter.
That's right. You rub them together too much, you lose them.
Yeah. Hey, I can fill up now for $85. So, hey,
instead of $105.
Jeez. Again, our show is brought to you each week by Affordable Interest Mortgage, your one-stop shop for all of your mortgage needs. Kurt, what's happening right now in the mortgage world?
Well, as everybody knows, you know, the you get speculation that the market's crashing and that the rates are going to 6.5-7% and home value is going to drop 50. That's not the case. We still don't have a 3-month supply of home. We barely have 6 weeks. Certain homes are not going to bring the value anymore. If that house isn't in nice condition, you cannot ask premium money for it. If it is in good condition, there's still bidding wars. I got many of my agents calling me up, telling me that they need the appraisal gap still on certain homes. So the nice homes are still bringing the money. It's the ones that need a little bit of reconditioning. Because of that, there's different loans out that can now help you do those kind of things. So if you're in the market of having a house and you need to maybe do some improvements, now might be the time because the value's there.
Yeah.
Because in 6 months to a year, that value may slow down. I don't see it dropping 10, 20% like some of these naysayers do. But it's going to eventually stabilize in 2023. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunity now that you're not going to see in a year. Like when we talked, there was opportunity at 3%.
Sure.
Now it's gone.
Right.
It's going to happen again.
And you've ridden this horse several times, right?
Yeah, this is kind of a little bit of a reminder, 2008. I don't see it like 2008. Because that was just a crash. That's not going to happen. We don't have unemployment down there.
Right.
But it's what I call a readjustment. Mm-hmm. And it's a healthy readjustment. It puts things more back on a level playing field for both the buyer and the seller.
Right. One of your key team members is here with us today.
I think
I said that how he wrote it down for me to say. One of your key team members.
Yes, key member. That means he has to insure me.
David's been with me for 15 years. All he specializes in is reverse mortgages. He knows them inside and out. He's seen a lot of changes, and I wanted to bring him on because there's a lot of things going on now with reverses that is going to benefit seniors as we go forward and how they can actually make money on their home through the appreciation of the home.
Right. Okay. David, welcome again.
Thank you.
Good to see you, sir.
Good to be here.
Good to be seen, as they say,
yes.
Right? reverse mortgage. Let's take that. We talk about Kurt being through this road before. You've certainly been through it too, and there's been some changes to this. But we said this last time you were on the show. I have really started to see more in this last 4 or 5 years, especially financial planners bringing this up now to people where they used to not be so anxious to do so. Not because it wasn't good. I just don't think they really understood it.
They did not understand it, and I hate to say it, but if they did understand it, there's another reason for doing it. They're managing money for people,
right,
for starters. They want to manage all the money they can manage.
Sure.
And one of those assets is the house. And actually, I never quite understood if they could help a borrower doing a reverse mortgage free up that cash if there was a possibility for them to even make it grow for that borrower. Why they don't see that or didn't see that. Maybe they see it more now because they are more active in helping reverse mortgage. It's got to be part of a plan.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Once again, David Olson is with us. 720-895-0500 is the number. You can reach David, and we'll give you that several times throughout the show. Let's just start at the beginning. And again, I know you go through this every time, but, new listeners we get, and some people probably thinking of a lot of other things. So let's run through the qualifications a little bit, what it takes to kind of qualify now.
Well, first of all, you've always had to be 62 or older. Okay. A spouse can be younger these days. Never used to be the case. It's detrimental, though, age. How much is available to you of your appraised value? Age is a qualification. for how that formula. So if one person is young, the younger you are, the less money available to you. So a 72-year-old gets more money available than a 62-year-old. But qualification-wise, back in the day when I first started, we didn't have to look at credit except to make sure there was nothing there that could turn into a federal debt that could turn into a lien on the property. That was the extent of us looking at a credit report. And then income-wise, we didn't have to worry about it either. All that changed in 2015, actually, somewhere in there. And now we have to look at credit. We have to look at income, prove income, all those things. Although it's not anywhere near what a forward mortgage has to do.
Not even close.
No. I mean, I may have four or five things I've got to collect from the borrower when they have to collect 45 things or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But there's qualifications now. Sure. It never used to be there when I first started. It's not a major problem. If we have some issues, we can do letters of explanation with documentation and usually make it work anyway.
Okay.
And then there's a little something called life expectancy set-aside. If we have real problems, the lender can ask for a set-aside of taxes and insurance. And they take that out of available money and set it over here and pay the taxes and insurance, property taxes, homeowners insurance, mm-hmm. which in the long run is probably a good thing anyway. Because now they not only don't have a house payment, they don't have taxes and insurance to worry about either. It's all handled.
Right. And, you know, one of the biggest, and we can talk about myths and misconceptions for hours on this, but when you look at people that think, and I think one of the biggest things you say is people think, oh, they don't own their house anymore. It's kind of like the same thing with a mortgage, right?
The bank? Exactly the same. His people have a lien on the property. So does the reverse mortgage lender. They only have a lien. You remain on title, like you are now.
Right.
Nothing's changes about that.
Right. Now, if the older spouse, which is usually the guy, and I don't know how that ended up, you know, women usually outlive the man, right?
Yeah.
So if they, whether they pass away or maybe move into a nursing home or something like that, that spouse can stay in that home for their life, right?
For life. Nothing changes. It's like if there's two people and one of them passes away or goes into a nursing home, the other spouse stays in there as long as it's their primary residence and they pay taxes and insurance. Nothing at all changes. And now, if one of those pass away and there's only one living in the house and the other one needs to go to a assisted living somewhere down the road, after 1 year, it's no longer considered their primary residence. And that's when that loan comes due, but that's a year down the road.
Okay, so that gives everybody time to get together and figure things out.
But, you know, most of the time in that instance, you probably sell the house long before that year passed because you're paying taxes, insurance, and lights, and heat, and air, and all those things if nobody's living in it.
Sure. And you look at the peace of mind that this gives people, and, I mean, maybe you can tell me the last few people that have called, I mean, what's kind of been their purpose of trying to get that money?
Well, the purpose, right, mainly is they have a mortgage and they need cash flow. And one way to get it is to make that mortgage payment go away. Mm-hmm. And we can do that with a reverse mortgage. Again, if we have enough room in the formula to generate that many dollars.
Right.
But that is a big one right now. How do you generate cash flow if you have no other way of means of doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And some people even have stocks, but they don't want to. It's amazing if people have a lot of stocks. I don't know where you guys are, but amazing. People that have a lot of stocks, they don't want to sell them when it's high because it might go higher.
Yeah.
Or they're earning a lot. They don't want to sell them as low because they're losing
money. They've lost too much.
So they never want to sell them.
Sure.
So they do a reverse mortgage, and they don't have to start selling off stocks when it's not a good time, for instance.
I got a question. If somebody has a house, especially with the value the way it is now,
right?
In more cases than not, they're not just going to be able to get rid of the payment. They're going to have access to cash that they can take or they can leave sitting. But explain to us what happens to that cash over the time if they don't take it.
Well, if they have enough cash that they can pay off a mortgage and still have more left, or if they didn't have a mortgage at all,
right?
So all that money is available to them, one of the options is a line of credit. Now, unlike your line of credit, this line of credit grows in a reverse mortgage.
Correct.
So as it sits there, it gets larger, and yours doesn't.
No.
The other thing with yours is it can be frozen.
Correct.
If a lender sees things like what?
Value going down. Yep.
Mm. That'll never happen with a reverse mortgage line of credit.
Correct. Because mine might be capped at $50,000, but if they got $50,000 cash available in their HELOC, that could grow as the years go on. That could grow to $60,000 to $70,000 to $80,000
right.
and give them access to it when they need it.
Correct.
It just sits there growing.
Just seeing they're growing. And yeah. it may be growing at a higher rate than you can earn in any market.
Yeah. Yeah. In most cases, it will.
Yeah.
And many people don't know that.
No, they don't. The other thing we don't talk about enough is payments. You can actually take payments off of that money. You don't have to take a lump sum. You don't have to take the line of credit. If you prefer the payments every month for life, no matter how long you live, those payments will be there. And if there's two people again, one dies, those payments continue till the second one is gone. So that's something we don't talk about often enough. So what do we got? We got payment option, we got line of credit, and we got some lump sum. Or any combination of all of those things. You can piece it together.
Sure. And the good thing is they can do what they want. There is no, exactly. I call it the spending policeman outside asking you, okay, now what are you going to do with this?
Exactly.
You can do what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. They do tell you that they prefer you don't buy an annuity with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because an annuity generally would generate another fee from whoever's doing the annuity, and because you can do a line of credit or payments right in the reverse, that's an annuity. So why go outside and do one?
Yeah.
That's the only thing they can't tell you what to do once you have your money, mm-hmm. but they have a very strong suggestion about that annuity piece.
Sure. Give David a call, 720-895-0500. It's affordable interest mortgage. If you've got any questions, and if you have any questions for us now, hey, we'll take your calls, 303-477-5600. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. We'll be right back.
Here's why you need personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh on your side. He understands the way the jury thinks. In the context of a personal injury case, you have been hurt by someone else's negligence. The idea is that you're going to try to recover so that you can get back to where you were just prior to that incident for you money. So when we talk about fairness, we're talking about six people that you don't know. Those six people hear evidence and make a unanimous decision that will decide what the fair value is. When you're the one that's hurt, you have a good idea what you think it's worth. The question is, can you persuade those other individuals, whom you don't know and weren't witnesses, to believe that's what the case is worth? Kevin Flesh understands the way the jury thinks. Call now for a free consultation, 303-806-8886. Flesh and Beck Law. They get results.
Now's the time to get into the Outdoorsman's Attic. Their summer sale is in full swing. All fishing gear, 10 to 50% off. Tents, sleeping bags, and packs save 30%. 30% off all knives, Sitka clothing, 25% off. And if you're in the market for a gun safe, stop by the Outdoorsman's Attic. It's Colorado's largest outdoor consignment store, located at 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan. They've also got live bait, and if you haven't picked up your Colorado fishing or hunting licenses yet, they can help you there as well. If your firearm needs some work, head downstairs and see Scott the gunsmith. If you've got some hunting, fishing, and camping gear you're just not using anymore, stop by and see Billy, and he will explain their consignment program and how you can turn that gear into cash. Outdoor gear, guns, and ammo, all at the Outdoorsman's Attic, 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan.
Hey, Dan, you know our jobs are pretty different. I'm a baseball announcer, you're an attorney, and a talk show host.
Yeah, but we do have something in common.
Really? What's that?
Our favorite car dealer, Len Lyle Chevrolet.
Yeah, definitely not your typical dealership.
That's so true, Jack. No high-pressure sales tactics. They respect your time. And when you have two jobs, that's important.
You know, I'd recommend Len Lyle Chevrolet to anyone. And with their low overhead, that means
lower prices. Yeah, we really do have something in common.
Len Lyle Chevrolet. Go east and pay the lease. Chevy, find new roads.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. If you're just joining us, it's Today We Call Your Money Matters, brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage. 720-895-0500 is the number. Kurt Rogers is with us, which you've heard for many years on the show. And his reverse mortgage specialist, David Olson, is also with us. So, David, you've said this many times. This isn't for everyone, but, boy, it can help a lot of people. So when, you know, people call you, okay,
yep,
what are those first few questions to figure out, even initially? Hey, I can tell you in a couple of minutes with these few answers, you know, if we should continue this conversation, really.
That is true. One of the first questions I always have to get answered is, how long do you plan to stay in the home? There are upfront costs involved with any loan, as well as a reverse mortgage.
Okay.
So if they tell me that they're thinking about a move to Florida or Arizona or wherever, they need to think about it, because those upfront costs need to spread out over time. Now, if there's an absolute need to do it, fine. But that's one of the things I need to consider, how long they're going to live in the home. Secondly, if they have children, and I don't care how old they are, because when I ask the question, you have children, either the property itself or the equity in it. So we have to consider that. Now, most of the time, they say, no, they're fine, and they just want us to live as comfortably as we can.
Which is the way it should
be.
It's the way it should be.
I have ran into the opposite, but that's over all these years that you're bound to.
Have you talked to your kids? Do they expect
to get it? Have you talked to them? That's a good question. Sometimes I forget to ask that one. Have you talked to them? And at some point, I got to come up with, hey, wait a minute, did you talk to your kids?
Yep.
Because sometime it's going to be a surprise. They're going to think you own that home, and you've had a reverse mortgage on it for 20 years. And a reverse mortgage loan balance grows. You know, there are facts, absolute solid facts about a reverse mortgage.
Right.
You are not making payments on that mortgage. Like on a regular mortgage, you've got you've got taxes, insurance, and principal in a payment. On a reverse mortgage, you don't have a principal or interest payment. So where does that money, how does it get to the bank? It grows the balance of the loan over time. But that has no effect on you, because you're not making a payment. But it affects the heir's equity.
And we've talked about this in the past. What many people don't understand about a reverse, as the payoff is going up, so is the appreciation of the home.
Absolutely.
If you track it over a 10-year period at 4%.
Oh, yeah.
So if the payment's going up, the house is still going up, so that amount of equity that you have is available is going to stay there, because everything pretty much stays the same.
There's always equity in it. Initially, years ago, we would look at we give them an amortization statement, and sometimes it would go to zero at some point when they're 90 years old or something, you know. But now I hardly ever see one go back. As a matter of fact, sometimes there's more equity in it down the road than there is right now. So, yes, there's a certain block of equity that's always there, because that formula is designed to leave a good piece of equity in that home after you make use of what is available to you. So that equity, like Kurt says, is growing at least a 4% average over time.
Right. And, you know, let's say the parents pass away, whatever, or get out of the house. The heirs or the kids, I mean, they have the right to make all that right and still get the house, right?
Yes, they do.
Sure.
They're in control. Whoever the parents leave as their executor of the estate is in control. Sometimes there's another myth that we hardly talk about. People think that the bank becomes in control of the house once they pass away. They do not, unless you give them control.
Okay.
The heirs, the executor of the estate, controls how that will, if they have one, hopefully, is handled. And they can sell it, or somebody in the family can buy it and pay off the reverse, just like any other loan.
The bank only cares about getting whatever's
due. That's it. They want their money. They don't
want a house. They're not in the real estate business. They're in the loan and money business.
That's right.
So they don't want foreclosures. They don't want a reverse mortgage.
No, they don't.
No.
So what's the time frame? You know, I call you today, we have a good conversation, come meet with you. We guess we can talk about the counseling side of it that's yep. part of this. And then how long does this whole process kind of take?
I always say 30 to 45 days. Now, the first piece is that we talk on the phone for a few minutes, but ideally we get together face-to-face right. for about an hour session and just talk reverse mortgages and how that affects you and how the numbers work for you. And then we talk about the counseling piece. You have to go to an FHA counselor, certified counselor, to make sure that you're not being told things that aren't true about a reverse mortgage, to make sure that you can afford to live in the home, pay your taxes, insurance, and maintenance, and to make sure that physically you can stay in the home. That's mm-hmm. part of what this counselor's job is. And I've never seen anybody fail.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. It's not a test.
Yeah. they just want to make sure that you understand what you're
exactly.
doing.
Exactly.
Pretty simple.
And then they get a certificate that goes with the loan application to the lender. Now, there's two things we're not in control of, either us or the borrower, and that is the counseling session, how quickly they can get it done, and the appraisal, of course.
Okay.
Now, those two things change from time to time. If the counselors are terribly busy, there's a 2-3 week lag. If they're not, it's like tomorrow. Same with appraisals.
Mm-hmm. And they can do them either face-to-face or...
The face-to-face has been gone since COVID. The local people were required to do face-to-face, the local counselors, and they never charged here locally. There's a bunch of national certified counselors that can do it on the phone, always could, and they FHA allows a reasonable fee for that counseling. And they, all those national counselors charge a fee. The locals don't, and they are doing telephone too now. I don't know if they'll ever go back to it. I don't know what the deal is.
Right.
They should be back to it by now, but mm-hmm. they're not. But they still don't charge, so that's a good thing.
Okay.
With inflation, how is that affecting the customer's ability to for withdrawals? Has it affected anything in the reverse?
Well, if somebody is already at the point where they have to, they're withdrawing on their savings or investments,
right.
and now we've got inflation, and that number they were withdrawing isn't enough anymore. So now, do they want to increase that withdrawal from their investment? And what happens if they do that? That investment runs out sooner, okay? So if they're looking at that situation, you have to weigh, does it make more sense to do a reverse mortgage and get that money out, either in a line of credit or payments, and not have to hurt your personal investments any further?
To make sure you have enough money
right.
at the end.
Mm-hmm. You got to balance those two things, because a home is an asset, period. Just like that investment you've got over here that you call money.
Yeah.
People forget to call that equity in their home money. It is money sitting there, and it should be used.
Now, over the lifetime, so to speak, of this reverse mortgage, the housing market may fluctuate a little bit.
Absolutely.
So let's say it goes down a little bit. How does that affect things?
Once you're in a reverse mortgage, is that what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about? Once you're in a reverse mortgage, that has no effect. Nothing has any effect once you're in the reverse mortgage. Values go down, values go up. Nothing affects that reverse mortgage once it's closed. When values go down, you know, if you haven't done a reverse mortgage yet and you've been thinking of it and all you did was keep thinking and now you've got values down, that affects you. Or let's say interest rates go up.
Right.
And you've been thinking about it and did not act. Now, you're going to have an effect there. So,
yeah.
If you're thinking about it, when the values are right and the rates are right, you should probably get a serious thought about it rather than just some thought that's in your mind.
Sure. And, hey, to call you is free.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Just to
and my session is free when I go out and meet with them. I meet with them at their home or in my office. It's, I like to say, your table or mine.
Sure. And there's cookies on the table, that's better.
That's better.
All right, yeah.
They come to my office, I can put cookies on the table.
You always have cookies on the table. But see, like us in a mortgage, if you're looking at it, like I tell people about making their house mortgage safe by having a little bit of line of credit, with a reverse mortgage, that kind of does the same. And that opportunity, if you think that the market's going to change, that opportunity is starting to dwindle.
Correct.
We've talked about that just the other day.
Mm-hmm.
How as the value comes down, you start to lose opportunity.
They'll do it, but you don't have as much availability.
Yeah. You can miss the payment, but you don't have the extra cash.
Exactly.
And that happens either way, whether it's the rate or the...
Or the value.
The value of the house.
Yep.
Is there a limit as to what the value can be of a house?
Well, a limit upward is FHA has a max lending limit of $970,800.
Roundabout numbers.
Yeah, most houses I deal with are going to be within that limit.
Right.
Now, you run into million-dollar plus homes, and there's private products for those. Lenders have private products. Generally, as a percentage of the value, they don't give you as much as FHA does available to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have FHA behind you making a couple of guarantees, by the way. FHA guarantees a couple things.
Right.
Private product doesn't have those guarantees.
For sure. Give David a call. Hey, he'll be glad to help you. Again, you've heard Kurt on the show for many years, and David's been with Kurt 15 years. Does it seem like 30 sometimes, Dave?
Oh, go ahead. Sometimes. Go ahead and answer that one.
Well, we were probably 15 together or more at the other business.
Yeah, we worked together like 20, so we've been around each other 30 plus. Yeah.
But, hey, it's a company you can trust. Hey, it's a gentleman you can trust. So, hey, give David a call. He'll sit down with you, bring who you want to the meeting once you get with David, and he'll be glad to help you and answer any questions. 720-895-0500. David, thank you so much.
You bet.
Kurt, thank you, sir.
You bet. Have
appreciate
a nice
it.
One.
You.
The financial opinions and advice expressed on the preceding program are those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Do you know what direction the stock market will go? Nope, no one does. But it's extremely important to discover the tools you can use if the market goes up, down, or sideways. These same tools could be income strategies or long-term wealth strategies. Text the word investing to the number 210-210 and join us for a free investing class right here at OTA. Text the word investing to the number 210-210 today. Also, check out the podcast, Investing and Trading Live, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Want to keep making your 30-year payment but own in 15 years? Want to be able to access your equity for future needs and not pay for it now? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. We have been showing Coloradans how to own their home in less time without changing their 30-year payment. Home values are at the highest in their history. Take advantage of being able to access your equity for 10, 20, 30 years without making payments now. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Worried about inflation? Everything getting too expensive? Learn how to be able to access your equity without having to refinance and pay closing costs over and over and over. Do it once and you're good for 30 years. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Tired of paying too much interest to own your home? Stop! Learn how to lower your total interest cost, 720-895-0500. Locally owned and operated since 2001, and where it's all about you is not just our motto, it's who we are. NMLS 298-191, regulated by DORA.
Before we get back to the show, you know, our eyes are very important. Let me tell you who I've been trusting my eye care to. It is Stack Optical. For over 10 years, hey, Alan's been taking great care of us, and he will take great care of you as well. Their eye exam, folks, is only $69, and it has been $69 for years. And Alan just says, hey, they want to give a great eye exam, a thorough eye exam, and take care of you, so they've never raised that price. So get in, give them a call, 303-321-1578 for all your optical needs. If you're needing a new pair of glasses, hey, you want to have a better experience in the outdoors, whether it's golf, riding your bike, they've got the Stack Sports Pack, so prescription sunglasses. Maybe you've got a hard prescription no one else has been able to figure out. Give Alan Stack a chance at Stack Optical. Of course, they can handle repairs, your contacts, all of it. Right there at 2233 South Monaco Parkway in Denver, 303-321-1578. StackOptical.com is the website. And I always tell you, at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference.
Hey, Dan, you know our jobs are pretty different. I'm a baseball announcer, you're an attorney and a talk show host.
Yeah, but we do have something in common.
Really? What's that?
Our favorite car dealer, Len Lyle Chevrolet.
Yeah, definitely not your typical dealership.
That's so true, Jack. No high-pressure sales tactics. They respect your time. And when you have two jobs, that's important.
You know, I'd recommend Len Lyle Chevrolet to anyone. And with their low overhead, that means
lower prices. Yeah, we really do have something in common.
Len Lyle Chevrolet. Go east and pay the lease. Chevy, find new roads.
Riding an e-bike will make you feel like a kid again. Just try it. Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are a fun way to ride the trails. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. We have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Come take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
Before we get back to the show, let me remind you, coming up next is Food Chat. Hey, this is a great show, and you're going to learn a lot about food, where it comes from, food production. Greg Bloom and Chef Jackson Lamb will be with you, so don't go anywhere. Stay tuned for Food Chat.
Personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law has a unique background that makes him a more effective advocate for you. He handles both criminal and civil cases. Most attorneys only do one or the other, but Kevin has almost 25 years of experience on both sides, which means he has more practice in the courtroom. Most personal injury attorneys will say they have experience in court, but since only about 10% of personal injury cases actually go to trial, those attorneys only appear in court once or twice a year. Because Kevin also takes criminal cases, he appears in court constantly. Kevin has a rare ability to present an argument that only comes from years of experience learning how to read a courtroom. Personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh continues to practice both civil and criminal defense because he believes the courtroom keeps him nimble. Trial tested, trial ready. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Schedule a free consultation now. 303-806-8886.
KLZ 560, your home station.
Welcome to Food Chat, a weekly show that's all about food production, including farming, ranching, processing, and basically all things involved in getting food from the field to your plate. Now, let's get you reconnected to your food, and here are your hosts, Greg Bloom and Chef Jackson Lamb.
Talk about an uphill battle, 2,000 acres of beans and cattle. But he don't ever get a rattle, he just goes till the sun goes down.
This is Gregory Bloom and Chef Jackson Lamb. Welcome to another edition of Food Chat. Chef Jackson and I are going to have a great time talking to you today about Colorado wine. Chef Jackson, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Greg. Great to be here again with you, as we always are on Wednesdays. Fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, it's just a beautiful time of year. And, you know, Colorado is great with the four seasons. I love this state because of the four seasons. But, you know, we're headed into the fall here soon and the cool off. And, hey, that means that a lot of things will be coming off the vine.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Greg, let's look at it this way. You know, when we read the local newspapers, they're talking about Rocky Ford melon. They're talking about Olathe corn. You know, they're promoting Palisade peaches. But we have such a dynamic wine industry in the state of Colorado, and everybody is harvesting right now. Not only the cantaloupe people and the melon people and the peach people, but right now we're taking a look at those grapes every day. Are they ready to pick? Should we wait a day or two? When is the next frost coming? It's just part of the Department of Ag, and it's fascinating that we have seen our wine industry grow as much as it has in the last 30 years.
Yeah, that's very interesting point that you make, because, you know, I grew up in Colorado. I'm a Colorado native, and gosh, as a farm kid, I never heard anything about a Colorado wine industry. That's just been the last, like you said, last two decades. And the cool thing about Colorado is, as people know from driving around the state, we have some very diverse different kinds of growing regions. You know, if you're driving up in the mountains along the I-70 corridor and you're driving, you know, through Delta and Montrose counties or down further into the Four Corners area of Durango and Alamosa in the San Luis Valley, prolific amount of great agricultural products that come out of the San Luis Valley. And then you got the Grand Valley area. But that is so different than you go down to where they grow all the melons, you know, where Michael Hirakata and Rocky Ford is. And it's just cool to see that no matter where you are in Colorado, kind of in a desert place or in the, you know, the mountains, which get a lot more moisture, you have some great ag and some great, actually great places to grow different kinds of wine, different, not grow wine, but grow the grapes for wine.
Absolutely. And, you know, once we get Greg on the line here, there's been a lot of changes in what they're growing in this state as well. You know, we have some of the highest vineyards in the world. And you know, we live here. It's not that high. It's only 4,700 feet. But when we compare to other major wine growing regions around the world, we are among the highest. I think only Argentina has higher altitude vineyards.
Right. Well, we can ask Doug about that question because I'm sure he'll be able to explain how they do that. I mean, how do you grow varieties of wine in such high altitudes? You know, I don't know, but our guest will know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, along with those lines, you know what? And I know what you're thinking: wine and food pairing. Well, that's the next natural thing when we're talking about wines, but let's get through the wine section first with Doug, because I think he's got a lot to say about what his office is all about. You know, recently in the past, they had the Governor's Cup competition, and they announced the winners last week, but Doug puts on a big show in November that's open to the public where they do a wine and food pairing for the winning wines of the Colorado Governor's Cup Challenge.
Hey, let's ask Doug about that, and he's on with us now. Hey, Doug, this is Doug Caskey, the Executive Director of the Colorado Wine Industry Development Board. Hey, Doug, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Doug, it is a pleasure to have you on Food Chat. Jackson Lamb here, of course, with Greg Bloom. And, you know, in this show, we kind of explore everything that's all about food. And, you know, of course, I think this is a very big month with Colorado wines, from a harvesting to a bottling competition, and then all the food shows going on. Well, you know, I can talk about this stuff all afternoon, Doug, but I think you're the expert. Why don't you share with us a little background of the Colorado Wine Advisory Board? How long have you been in business? I know you're attached to the Department of Agriculture. We've had some of the ag people on in the past. So, let's open it up to you, Doug. What do you say?
Well, thank you. Thank you again for having me. Yes, the Colorado Wine Industry Development Board is part of the Colorado Department of Agriculture. We were created by the state legislature in 1990 in order to support and foster the development of the wine industry here in Colorado. You know, there were grapes grown in the Palisade area and other areas, including the Front Range, back in the 19th century. A lot of the immigrants that came to Colorado brought grapes with them from Europe and their own winemaking traditions. I'm not sure it was a big commercial industry. I think it was mostly, you know, wine for home and community. But obviously Prohibition kind of put a kibosh on that in the 1920s. And then the federal government funded an economic development project called the Four Corners Project in the 70s. And that looked at, you know, various ways to stimulate the economy for the Four Corners state. One of the things they looked at was grapes and as to whether or not it was a commercially viable crop for our region. And if you look at the current wine industries in New Mexico and Arizona and Colorado, you can really trace back a lot of the origins of the current industry to that Four Corners project. Anywhere you can grow peaches, you can grow grapes. And so obviously the Grand Valley in Colorado, where Palisade peaches come from, is a great place to grow grapes. The advantage to grapes is that they take a little less, actually quite a bit less water than peaches. So it was it was attractive to the fruit growers in the 70s because they were just coming off some severe drought in the 1960s that hindered the peach crop. So grapes were kind of a welcome addition to what they were able to grow. And from there, we've expanded, you know, in the early days of, in 1990, when they passed the legislation for the wine board, I think there were 5 wineries in the state, and now we've got 170-some. And we're approaching about 1,000 acres of grapes. Most of those grapes are planted in the Grand Valley, as I mentioned, which is the area between Palisade and Grand Junction along the Colorado River. There are more grapes in the West Elks AVA, American Viticultural Area, which is between Paonia and Hotchkiss along the North Fork of the Gunnison River in Delta County. And then we have grapes down in the Four Corners area. There are some grapes grown on the Front Range. Not a lot, but people are certainly experimenting with that. And we have wineries all over the state. I think most people don't realize that even though the grapes are primarily grown on the western slope, we have more wineries up and down the Front Range than we do anywhere else in the state. So it's not hard to find a winery to visit and sample some wares and have a good time.
You know, I just wanted to take a moment there, Doug, to talk about AVAs. You know, the people that are not on the wine business, what are you talking about? These are American viticultural areas, correct?
Right. They are areas that are established and identified by the federal government, by the Tax and Trade Bureau of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Corporation of the Department of Treasury. They are areas where there's a unique growing condition or climate. So, you know, the most famous in the U.S. is Napa Valley.
Of course.
That is an AVA. But, you know, Napa has developed many, many sub-AVAs, smaller classifications and areas within the Napa Valley. And so Colorado has 2 American viticultural areas that are recognized by the federal government. I mentioned the Grand Valley, that's around Palisade, and then the West Elks, which is around Paonia. In the past, I got a few others identified, but those efforts have not born fruit, as it were, so far.
Doug, would that be based on volume?
No, it really isn't based on volume. It's based on a unique climate. So, you know, as long, you do have to have an industry there. You have to have, you know, grapes being grown so that you can show in your application to the government that, yes, this is a viable grape-growing area and does have unique climatic or geological characteristics that impact the
Very
wine.
Very cool. Well, Doug, one of the things that really does impact the wine is our altitude. Greg and I were talking earlier, you know, you're in Grand Junction, it's 4,700 feet, you don't think, well, there's not much altitude here, it's only 4,700 feet. But when we compare that from an agricultural perspective, and we compare it to other wineries or vineyards, we're pretty high up on the list there, aren't we?
Yes, actually, as far as I know, the only part of the world that has higher vineyards is Argentina, because their vineyards run up to, I think, 10,000 feet in elevation, but they're so much closer to the equator that it's a different climate there. You know, when you talk to California about high-altitude vineyards, they're talking, you know, 1,200, 1,500 feet above sea level. And yeah, for California, that's high altitude.
Yeah, up in Lodi, they maybe at 2,000 feet. Woohoo! They're way up there, aren't they?
Yeah, really. But what happens?
I love it.
What happens is we get as much heat during the growing season as they do in Napa or Tuscany or Bordeaux, but it comes in a little shorter season. So, you know, there's fewer days between the last spring frost and the first fall frost, but we get as much heat. So we can ripen and produce most of the Vitis vinifera variety, the traditional European grape variety. Some of the really late ripening grapes, Zinfandel comes to mind. That doesn't do well in Colorado because usually it's going to ripen in November when we've already had at least one fall frost and probably some snow. Just a quick footnote on that. The altitude also brings more UV radiation from sunlight, a little more intense here. So we have to make some modifications for that, where in places like California, they'll pull leaves so that the grapes get more sunlight. We can't do that here because the grapes are going to get sunburned. So, we need a little more shade here because of the elevation.
Very interesting. Hey, Doug, the Denver Post ran a great story last month. In fact, it was the end of July, on some unusual grape varietals that we're experimenting with in Colorado just to see if they can be a little bit more cold tolerant. Do you have any information on that?
Part of the impetus for looking at some of these new varieties is obviously the climate is shifting a bit. And in 2019 and 2020, we had back-to-back severe temperature swings in October. And while those temperature drops came after we'd harvested the grapes, they came well before the vines are hardened off and ready for winter temperatures. So we had some significant damage in those 2 years to the Vitis vinifera vines, such that in 2021 we had very, very little vinifera grapes that we were able to harvest. So growers and winemakers had to turn to the more cold tolerant, the cold hardy varieties. A lot of those are crossings between the Native American species of grapes and the European grapes. So, they have a lot of characteristics that are similar to vinifera. There's a grape called Traminette that one of the parents is Gewurztraminer, and indeed it smells and tastes a lot like Gewurztraminer, but it's much more cold tolerant. There's another one called Aramella. One of its parents is Muscat. So again, that very flowery, perfumey aroma, but a lovely, lovely dry white that is much more cold tolerant. So, yes, in the last couple of vintages, we've seen a lot of wineries turning to some of these varieties that people may not be familiar with, like St. Vincent, Verona, Chamberson, and in last year's Governor's Cup collection and again in this year's Governor's Cup collection, we see several of those. Several wines made from those more cold-tolerant varieties, and they are they're really wonderful wines. I think, a lot of people for years have said, hybrid grapes, they don't make good wine. Well, I think the case was people weren't paying attention to them. They weren't treating them with respect and taking care to make good wine. And now that people are doing that, we've got some outstanding wines from some of these less than.
Doug, I'm sure that we have consumers out there that are creatures of habit. They buy the same wine all the time. So you're absolutely right. Their eye isn't on the ball with what is going out there. Hey, I will tell you that in my wine fundamentals class over at Metro State University, last week we tried the Petite Pearl from Carboy. Mm-hmm. Boy, that was a perky little red wine, but what a different name that was.
Yes, it is a relatively new cultivar created by Tom Plocker in Minnesota, I believe is where he's located. So again, he's breeding grapes for extreme cold conditions, and much colder than we face here in Colorado. And Petite Pearl is one of the real standouts that's coming out of his program. It's just a delicious, fruit-forward but structured and very elegant red, I think, and has a lot of potential.
What I love about it, Doug, is the new names. It's like previously the only Petite was really Petite Syrah, Petite Pearl.
Yes.
It just it makes you smile a little bit, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I think a lot of these names are fun.
Sure. Hey, Doug, let's just kind of switch a little bit. You brought in the federal government earlier. And it was announced last month that the most endangered river in America is the Colorado River. fortunately, we are at the headwaters of the Colorado River. The people all the way downriver in Arizona and California, they're not so lucky. Are you part of the talks with what how they would they want to restrict the river? And do you think that's going to affect wine production over in the West Elk or the Grand Valley AVA?
Well, it's definitely going to affect all agriculture because, you know, the government is requesting severe curtailment and cutback of water usage all along the Colorado River. You know, what I've been, I'm not part of the discussion, but what I've been told by some of our experts is that, you know, the water rights of the Grand Valley are very senior. They were established in the 1880s, if not before. And so, you know, they're reasonably well protected. That said, I was talking to my counterpart in Arizona, and there's a new law that's been passed that applies to their primary grape growing area, where if you buy property in the Wilcox, Arizona region, there are no water rights attached to it, regardless of the history of the property. You know, that's going to have a huge impact on the future development of all agriculture, but especially it's going to impact the grape growing area.
Good, Doug. That's a very good point. Hey, Greg, you had a couple of ideas about growing grapes on the Front Range. What were those?
Well, I was just wondering if there are people that maybe they're listening to this show, or maybe they're not, but that are interested in planting grapes in their backyard. And maybe, Doug, you could speak a little bit about how long does it take to plant a grape variety? And, you know, it's not like you're going to have grapes ready for eating on the table or making wine that year. You could talk about how long it takes. And then I have a question, like, can you plant a variety of grape that would thrive in this environment that could be used for both table grapes? And if you wanted to, you could take it somewhere and have wine made?
Well, you could make wine out of any kind of grapes. Table grapes generally are much larger, though they're, you know, have more meat and juice in them. Wine grapes tend to be much smaller. You know, yes, there's a lot of grapes that do grow on the Front Range. As a matter of fact, there are species of grapes that are native to Colorado and have been here for centuries. However, you know, one of the reasons we don't grow wine grapes on the Front Range in large scale is that our temperatures are a little colder during the winter here than they are in the West as well, and they're a little less consistent. You know, there's those January days where it's 70 degrees and we put our shorts on and we're loving it, but the grapevines here get very confused by 70-degree temperatures in January. So it's problematic. Additionally, we see a lot of hail in the Front Range that they don't see nearly as much on the Western Slope. So that's been one of the plagues for people trying to grow grapes on the Front Range, just those severe spring hailstorms. There are a lot of grapes that you can grow. Most of them tend toward the table grape varieties, but of course you can make wine out of them. Cannadice is a variety that I've seen in a lot of amateur winemaking competitions, and I've seen it in nurseries here too, that you can buy those vines and plant them, and they make some very pleasant wine. But again, it is more of a table grape.
And Doug, how long does it take normally to get a grape ready to produce some high quality wine? Is it a year or two or three or?
Well, you can get grapes the first year. From a commercial perspective, it's going to take probably 3 to 4 years before you get a commercially viable crop out of it. You know, for your home vineyard, yes, you can get a few grapes those first few years. You may not want to harvest extensively to give the vine more chance to develop so that you get more grapes in the future. You're right. It does take a couple of years before you're going to see.
Very good. Hey, you know, Doug, as we are coming up to wrapping this up in the next 2 minutes, you have a big event coming up in 2 months, first week in November. You want to share that with us?
Yes. It's called Colorado Uncorked, November 4th. At History Colorado, the museum in downtown Denver on Broadway, we will be tasting the 12 wines that were selected for the Governor's Cup collection by the judges we brought in from all over the country and around the state last month. We had, I think, six sommeliers from the Colorado hospitality industry. We had two masters of wine, two master sommeliers, and a lot of writers and other experts. So we brought in people from around the country to take a look and pick out the best wines in Colorado. They came up with 12, and that's what we'll be tasting at History Colorado, along with some small bite menus from some of the area's top chefs.
Doug, I see on your website, coloradowine.com, it's just a great website. Compliments to you and the Colorado Department of Ag for putting such a nice website together. But you have an events tab, and so people, if they're interested in that event and want to buy tickets for it, they can go to coloradowine.com and click on events. But there's also just some great information there about the wine industry in Colorado, so I would just encourage people to go check out your website.
And you can also find maps and lists of the wineries in the state by region. You can search by name. So I think, going back to the idea of these new varieties that people have never heard of, a great way to try them is to go visit wineries. And I encourage people to find a winery nearby or find a winery close to where you're going to be spending a long weekend in Colorado. Visit them and try some of the new varieties. Again, coloradowine.com is the place to go for that.
Fantastic. Hey, Doug. Thanks a lot for a great insight into the entire Colorado wine industry. We're small, but we're growing, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Doug, thanks for joining us on our show today. The information was really great, and look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully at one of these events that are on your website.
Well, we would love to have you. Thank you very much for having
me. Welcome. Thanks, Doug.
Take care.
Well, Chef Jackson, that was a great guest we had. I'm so glad that Doug was able to join us, and I really would encourage people to go to coloradowine.com and just see all the great information there about the Colorado wine industry. And, wine pairs with what, Chef Jackson? It pairs with food. So, typically people aren't just consuming wine all by itself. They're consuming with food. We'll have to have another show on pairing. And, I know you're an expert sommelier, but, hey, thanks for all your info today and your intel on the wine industry, Chef Jackson.
Well, I think that it's, wine is a living thing. And I think that, of course, some people just get into the same wine all the time. But when you think of the variety that's available out there, why not try something different every day?
Right. And, you have to go a little bit out of your way. You just go to coloradowine.com, click on the links to help you find a local place to buy this great local wine. But, you're probably not going to find it at the big box store or that big, huge liquor store. You just got to go a little bit out of your way. You can order it online. But I would just encourage people to support the local wine and ag industry in Colorado.
Greg, I really like what Doug said about, when you got a long weekend elsewhere in the state, look around. There's probably a winery, not a vineyard, but a winery within 5 miles. And just go check out the local scene. That's all. Fantastic advice.
Great. Hey, Chef Jackson, we're running out of time. Hey, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Food Chat, and bon appetit.
Today's Food Chat episode is brought to you by Ranch Fresh Meats. Ranch Fresh Meats finds the best quality meat products locally in the marketplace. Many of them pair well with wine, and today's show is all about wine, but Ranch Fresh Meats finds family farms that grow great things like bison, beef, local poultry. Go to ranchfreshmeats.com and sign up at the bottom of the homepage to get our weekly newsletter, because we put specials out every Monday to help you save money on local food. ranchfreshmeats.com. Here's to the farmer that plants the fields in the spring, that turn from green to that harvest honey. Hold one up for the banker downtown that got him on his feet with handshake money. Here's to the views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers.